Chris Phillips on Jazz FM. Listen in colour.
Thank you. Lacrimose. It's on the new album called Meta from Matt Ridley, bass player, who joins me here on The Blueprint. Good to have you here, Matt.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here.
I know you actually handed me, I'm sure, a copy of this album many moons ago. It's finally coming out on Whirlwind Recordings. Seven beautifully composed originals.
Thank you.
Second album?
Second,
second
yeah.
album. And I know the first album was very sort of world music influenced in places, and had a little tribute to Kenny Wheeler on there. In fact, there's a sort of Kenny Wheeler-ness about that. It's obviously a musician that's dear to your heart. Tell me about your feelings about Kenny Wheeler, because you actually did a homage to him on your last album as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did name that tune. It was actually a melody composed on a chord progression that already existed from one of his albums, which was one of the albums that really got me into jazz in a big way, which was Angel Song.
Yeah. And there was a melancholy about Kenny Wheeler's music in places, and Lacrimose, it's a state of melancholy and tearfulness.
It is indeed, yeah.
Is that something that you experience yourself? I know you... We'll talk about the meaning of Meta, and it seems like you've got a sort of a philosophical thing going on about humanity.
Sure.
For the most part. Tell me about your moments of melancholy and tearfulness. Straight in on the happy stuff.
Don't really know what to say, really. I suppose sometimes I'm listening or thinking about things, and I don't know, just the marvel of actual existence kind of overwhelms me.
Really? I mean, yeah. Like, you actually think that deeply that you kind of question your own existence, and you know, like Earth, Wind and Fire said in their anthem, you know, you are but a grain of sand, and that's the way of the world. Do you feel that way sometimes?
I do, actually. Sometimes when I'm feeling a bit depressed, you don't have to put that in the interview, by the way,
but it's in.
Sometimes the number of people in the world and the fact that we're all sort of just like walking around doing our things, thinking that, you know, we're important, and actually we're all just little self-conscious entities that have just, they're just bits of basically food that have been turned into a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
A deep thinker, for sure. I mean, I can see that from the title. Let's talk about Meta. That is all about universal love and love for your fellow human being, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually... there's a certain meditation that the Buddhists do called a Meta meditation, and that involves giving yourself feelings of benevolent kindness. So you're basically kind to yourself, and then you extend that to some... You think of people that maybe you're indifferent about, and then you extend it to people that you actually dislike, and then you extend it to the whole universe.
So it's like a sort of positive selfishness, as in you look after yourself and then pass that love on to other people. I like that. Well, maybe that's not a correct interpretation.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's selfish. It's more about...
Yeah.
Not
well,
being...
the word selfish can be, could have been stigmatized down the years. Mm. You know, maybe there's a positive side to it. Selflessness. Maybe.
Selfless. Yeah.
I love it. Are you a person that meditates yourself? Have you ever tried meditation to get into that plane of existence?
Yeah, I've been on a couple of silent retreats where I've like spent 10 days just meditating all day, and that the first time I did that, that was quite a big change in mindset. And, I realised up until that point, it was quite a... I realised on that course that I was carrying all this negative stuff around with me and feelings of resentment or frustration and stuff. And then doing that meditation just enabled me to be like really grateful for everything that I've got and experienced. Or, you know, I didn't really feel like I had any malice or...
Wow.
Or bad feeling, and that was really quite an amazing transformation in my head. And I try and retain that in day-to-day life, and just generally musically I try and not get too attached to the outcome of things. And just I think that's quite important for everybody really to go through life without sort of grasping after things or holding on to things.
It's so difficult in today's digital age where we're surrounded by marketing messages and monetization of anything that moves and all that. I mean, did you find that your own spiritual transformation in that small sense aided your physical sense? Did you feel weller after it?
Yeah, but that might have been through non-imbibing of alcohol and eating vegetarian food twice a day and no more.
Okay, that's the simple
I've regressed thing. in that way, unfortunately, but you know.
Yeah. So you're a bass player and you've got a fantastic band. I mean, leading a band on the bass, is that a bit like being John Terry, you know, captain of Chelsea at the back there, you know, holding up the back, as opposed to being a striker and being out front and being the captain? Or are there no captains in your band? Pardon all the metaphors there.
One of the things I love about jazz is the openness of the improvisation. And although obviously I have my ideas about how I want the compositions to sound, or as a band leader, it's actually really hard because any sort of thing that could potentially go wrong is magnified in your head. So half of my battle as a band leader is just trying to just like let it happen without trying to control it too much. Although the stuff I've written is very quite composed, as opposed to a lot of jazz where there's just like a melody and chords. I've written more specific parts for the instruments.
Right.
But then it's like a process of like allowing these great musicians to do what they do on it in a way that's kind of congruent with my intentions as the composer, but also enables it to have that jazzy feeling of freedom.
Let's get a little love for One and All with the title cut from the album. This is Meta. Ridley and the title cut of his latest album, Meta, here on The Blueprint. He joins me late in the night here. Thanks for coming by, Matt.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We should talk about your Pizza Express gig that you've got coming up first and foremost. It's a place to launch the album, I guess. Is it Monday?
Monday. Coming, yeah, 22nd.
And who's in the band?
It's Jason Yard on saxophones, although he's probably only going to play soprano on this gig. John Turville on piano, George Hart on drums, and myself on double bass.
Jason Yard is a great musician and right at the top of the food chain here in the UK, really, a world-class player. Tell me what he brings to your music.
Jason's a really fantastic all-round musician and a very interesting stylist on saxophone, especially soprano, in my opinion. Firstly, what I love about his playing is he brings a great soulful lyricism to the melodies I write, and actually that's really a crux of the compositions. I want all the melodies to actually, you know, have an emotional impact, and he does an amazing job of like playing them very soulfully and lyrically. He has a really unique way of playing where he employs all these extended techniques and unusual sounds, slurs and overtones, and there's nobody else that really sounds like him in that respect in the UK that I can think of.
Being soulful is is so important, isn't it, in this music?
Yeah, absolutely.
To be able to communicate with your audience and engage them, keep them engaged. You as a player, you're a bass player, but I mean, did you always want to be a bass player? Is that how you started out? And if so, who are your daddies of the bass, both upright and electric? If there are.
I guess, well, yeah, I was first turned onto the bass while listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Flea with the Blood Sugar Sex Magic album when I was about 14 or something. And then I was so into playing like in that sort of funky style that I progressed really rapidly, which encouraged me to take it further. And then when I got to music college, there was a bass there, and I thought, seeing as it's there, I might as well learn to play it. And that roughly coincided with me having my ears open to jazz. So by the time I'd actually left music college, I was a diehard jazzer, and the double bass had taken over.
Who's the man? Who's the big guy on double bass that inspires you?
I guess my all-time favourite has got to be Ron Carter, because he's on all my favourite records. But then I think the bass is such a fantastic instrument, and so individual, because it's like, you know, it's just a fret with strings over it. So, and you know, you can bow it, you can pluck it, and there's all these other, you know, so I love all the more out there players like Miroslav Vitus and Dave Holland. I've transcribed quite a lot, and newer guys like Larry Grenadier, amazing player, and old school as well, Gary Peacock is, but I just love that trio with Keith Jarrett so much, you know.
Yeah, that's a classic trio. What about you know, the slap basis and the funk basis of this world? Does that interest you? Are you a Marcus Miller man, for example? Stanley Clarke, maybe?
When I was a teenager, I was addicted to playing slap bass. but I don't know. I still love bass guitar, but I don't know, because playing double bass and maintaining or progressing constantly is such a full-time job. It does grow a little bit of dust at the moment, you know.
Yeah. And we're going to play something to finalise our chat here. But first of all, you've got a composition on your album called "Music to Drive Home To." What are you driving home to in your car at the moment?
Oh, a very wide variety of things. The most recent record I got is Elvin Jones Live at the Lighthouse, quite an old recording with Dave Liebman and Ben Grossman. And I got that because I saw Dave Liebman at the Vortex the other day, which was a really fantastic concert.
Intense.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. Other than that, I've been checking out some Chris Potter with the Underground Cities album. And I mean, I listened to a whole load of different music, so the thing that inspired that music to drive home to is really minimalist composers such as Steve Reich, like Music for 80 Musicians, and John Adams with his Phrygian Gates and Shaker Loops. And I found that great sort of contemplative driving music, which inspired the vibe of that piece.
Okay, the last piece I'm going to play from the album is "Mental Cases." Who are they?
Ah, well, the tune's actually named after a poem by Wilfred Owen, just serendipitously, because while I was composing it, I was reading some Wilfred Owen war poetry, and so if you get the album, you'll notice that one of the other tunes is called "Strange Meeting," which is another poem that he wrote. But I thought "Mental Cases" was kind of an apt for this kind of slightly frenetic, funky piece.
Matt Ridley, thank you so much for joining me here on The Blueprint.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Pizza Express on Monday, and then touring around Bradford, Pont-Aven, Colchester, Cambridge, Birmingham, Bristol, Cheltenham, and Swansea. Got your work cut out there. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Really looking forward to it.
Good to have you. This is "Mental Cases" from the new album Meta. Featuring Jason Yard on sax, that's bassman Matt Ridley and his quartet, my special guest, and that was Mental Cases. The title cut of the album Meta before that, and Lacrimose, all on the new album Meta on Whirlwind Recordings. That makes that a hat-trick of Whirlwind Recording artists I've been speaking with over the last 3 weeks here on The Blueprint. And we'll take a little break from the Whirlwind section next week, as I'll be speaking with German pianist and composer Olivia Trummer about her C2J project, Classical to Jazz. And she's due back in the country to perform as well. So welcoming Olivia Trummer on The Blueprint next week.